Yeah, good afternoon. I'd like to call the Finance Committee to order, please. Time is 1:33, 1:34, February the 7th. The members present today are Representative Thompson, Edgman, Wilson, Osterman, Stoltz, Guerra, Kawasaki, Holmes, and Munoz. Representative Newman has another meeting he's attending. He'll be up here shortly. I think Representative Costello is out sick. I'm not totally positive of that, but I think she is. So today we're going to hear from Karen Rayfield about the governor's supplemental budget request and have an overview of the statewide technology services. Before we get there, can you ask Helen to come out? Oh, there she is, hiding behind me. Well, first off, once a year you have another birthday. And we wanted to wish you a happy birthday, Helen. And Helen's been and is kind of leader of the pack here for the committee room, and takes care of all of the stuff that we do, and leads the rest of her able assistants along with her. So happy birthday, Helen. Okay. Karen, if you want to join us at the table, we'll go ahead and start getting into the supplemental and overview. And I believe that in your black binders, everybody should have, hopefully has with them, and if they'll look under the tab that says spreadsheet, should be able to follow along with what Karen's got. Anybody doesn't have that, let me know right now so we can... Okay, Helen, excuse me. Karen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, Karen Rayfield, Office of Management and Budget. Before you today is House Bill 91, the fiscal year 2013 supplemental budget request. You do have the bill, I believe, in your binder. There's also a one-page summary of the supplemental request and then the 13-page spreadsheet that I'll try to work through pretty quickly with the committee. But just to begin, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to highlight the overall supplemental bill. I do have with me today a number of agency representatives, so if the committee has specific detailed questions that I'm unable to answer, they can certainly provide you with an answer to your question. The FY 2013 proposed supplemental budget totals $24,456,000. Of that, there's a $2,877,700 decrease in unrestricted general funds, an increase of $4,200 in designated general funds, $24,464,600 in other funds, and federal funds of $2,864,900. On the one-page summary, you'll see that for agency operations, there's an overall decrease of $3,344,000. You'll see as we work through the spreadsheet that there are a number of transactions that result in that number, but just to highlight a couple of things for you before we get into the spreadsheet, there's the fire suppression supplemental that you see fairly regularly. We're requesting $5.3 million. Disaster relief, $3.4 million before you. There is a formula reduction in the Medicaid program of $25 million in general funds, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. A debt service reduction of just over $6 million. And then there are eight judgments and settlements that we bring forward when we get those agreements. They total $4,775,800. We do have a couple of capital supplemental requests. They total $27.8 million, of which $3.8 million is general fund. House Bill 91 contains 19 sections. As we go through the spreadsheet really is in order by the section, so we'll cover everything. But just to highlight for you quickly, Section 1 of the bill is the operating numbers section, followed by Section 2, which is the summary by department of the funding sources. Section 3 is the capital numbers, followed by two other funding summary sections. And then the language sections start on page 8 of the bill with Section 6 and go through Section 19. So we will, as I mentioned, we'll go through each one of the transactions in the order of the bill. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I will move to the spreadsheet. And just so the committee is aware of the information and the kind of the structure of the spreadsheet, you'll see a line number on the far left side, so we can kind of keep up with where we are as we're walking through it. There is a corresponding backup page number. So in your supplemental book, you should have a backup page that corresponds with this line number. You also will know from the spreadsheet which bill section it's in and the bill page and line number, the department, the component or project, a brief description, and the funding sources. So with that, we will start walking through this and try to do it as quickly as I can. I know you have another presentation.
Yeah, and I think we'll just hold questions, so you've got to walk all the way through it, and then we'll go back to any specific questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Chairman, on lines 2 and 3 of this spreadsheet, you have before you a request from the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development having to do with the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. As you know, that the Alcohol Beverage Control Board transferred from the Department of Public Safety to the Department of Commerce in the current year's budget. There were a couple of pieces that were not anticipated in the fiscal note, one having to do with legal assistance at the Department of Law and how those charges are allocated within the Department of Commerce, and then also having to do with underage drinking program. Those receipts come to the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board from the Division of Juvenile Justice. Those federal funds are no longer available. In both cases, we have included these requests in the fiscal year 2014 budget that are already before you. And as I go through the spreadsheet, I will try to flag for you the items that we have already contemplated and included in the 14 budget and those that we did not anticipate and will put them or are considering them for the amended budget that will come to you next week. On line 4 of the spreadsheet, Mr. Chairman, is for the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. This is, as you know, ADA is participating in a number of project development activities and financing perspectives. This will assist them in securing the financial and technical expertise that they need to work on these larger projects. It's a request for $200,000 in ADA receipts, and we did also include this in the 2014 budget. On line 5, you will see under the Department of Fish and Game, Wildlife Conservation, we are requesting a fund source change from general fund program receipts to fish and game funds. This is in compliance with some federal regulations having to do with receipts from patrons of sanctuaries and the waterfowl print program. So you will see in Section 15 later on a discussion about funding, capitalizing funds for the Fish and Game Fund in order to support this fund source change in the operating budget. And we have included this in the FY14 governor's budget as well. On line 6 of the spreadsheet, same situation for a fund switch for the Fish and Game Funds from program receipts. And this has to do with receipts that patrons pay for shooting ranges. So those should also be deposited into the Fish and Game Fund, and then in Section 15 you'll see that as well. On lines 7 and 8, Mr. Chairman, this has to do with the Department of Health and Social Services Pioneer Homes. We have two circumstances in the FY13 budget that we had not considered when we put together the current year budget. There are increases in contractual costs for the Pioneers Homes that we were aware of. However, we thought the department was going to be able to manage those increases within their existing budget. But that, coupled with some unrealized revenue that we had included in the budget, really put them in the situation of not being able to cover those increased costs. So you will see a $460,000 request for general fund on line 7 of the spreadsheet for those contractual cost increases. And then on line 8, you'll see some changes in funding sources and an increase in general funds as a result to cover and maintain the current level of services in our pioneers' homes. Both of these items are being considered right now for a budget amendment that we will be forwarding to you next week. On line 9 of the spreadsheet, Mr. Chairman, there is a request for security upgrades to the Office of Children's Services Anchorage Regional Office Building. You may be aware there were some very serious security threats earlier in this current year. These funds, $390,000 of general funds and $100,000 of federal funds, will help with the cost of installing or constructing a guard station, some surveillance system equipment, intercom systems, and security fencing and other efforts to make sure that the employees and also the clients that are served in this particular office building have greater safety measures. We are also considering this particular item for a budget amendment. On line 10 of the spreadsheet, Mr. Chairman, there is a request for $1.4 million in federal unrestricted authorization. And this is in response to a recommendation from legislative audit. The department has been eligible for a bonus under the Children's Health Insurance Program because of their performance and actually how well they're doing in managing that program. The department anticipates that they will continue to secure these additional funds. This will help us budget for those in the budget before you and also to help replace some uncollectible federal revenue that's no longer available for frontline social workers. So we are also looking at this for a 14 budget amendment. On line 11 is a social worker class study implementation, $1,185,000 in general funds, $315,000 in federal funds. This request is included in the 14 budget already. This is based on a study of the social worker job class. There's 288 positions that were involved in this class study. It did result in an increase in the ranges, one to two increase steps or ranges, and this will be built into the budget in 14, and this is a supplemental for the FY13. On line 12, Mr. Chairman, the Social Security income and child support, we are requesting $900,000 in designated general funds. This is additional Social Security income and child support receipts for children in protective custody. We have included this in our FY14 budget. On line 13, healthcare licensing and certification. This is a fund switch. It has to do with funds that are received for civil penalties, basically, that are applied to residents in facilities that are managed through the state or the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. This is a fund switch to more appropriately record them as statutory designated rather than general fund program receipts. We did include this fund switch in the governor's FY14 budget. On line 14 is a request for $400,000 under the Division of Juvenile Justice for increased medical costs for youth in our detention facilities. We have included this in the FY14 governor's budget. You may know that youth in custody are not eligible to be covered under Denali Kid Care or Medicaid. That's a federal rule. So we have included this increase request in the FY14 budget. Line 15 is for the Alaska Temporary Assistance Program. We have seen an increase in the low-income families with children that are covered by these services. This increase in federal receipts is available for the eligible participants in this program, and we have included it in the FY14 budget. Line 16, under Health and Social Services, General Relief Assistance, $925,000. There's been an increase in the services that are provided in this particular program. Who need emergency services, also the number of burials for indigents who are also covered by general relief assistance. We have included this amount in the FY14 budget. Line 17 is just a correction. There was a bill that passed last year, House Bill 129, on veterans' death certificates. The fiscal note was inadvertently omitted from the FY13 budget, so it's just a correction. It is included in the governor's FY14 budget request. On line 18 is general relief temporary assistance. This is a one-time request of $137,000. The division anticipates and is working with a work group right now to be able to manage those costs in FY14. They're not asking for an amendment or additional funds in 14, but they do believe they will need these additional funds to provide services for the remainder of this year. On line 19, under the commissioner's office, you will see a request for $1,154,900. Again, this is the bonus funds from the Children's Health Insurance Program based on the department's performance in managing the Children's Insurance Program. And these funds will be used to help the department in a number of areas in healthcare access and service delivery. As you know, the commissioner has been very engaged in looking for efficiencies and effectiveness in how we deliver our healthcare services and bringing the cost down of providing those services. On line 20, you will see our proposed decrement for the Medicaid program of $25 million. Mr. Chairman, this decrement is possible as a result of implementation of several cost-saving measures that were identified by the Medicaid Task Force and actually bringing the costs in below the projected amount that we included in the budget. On line 21, Mr. Chairman, this is in the Department of Labor. This has to do with increased lease costs in two buildings for the Department of Labor, one in Juneau and one in Anchorage. Quite simply, those leases were up for negotiation. They came in much higher than we had anticipated. We have included this request in the 2014 budget, and the Department of Labor just simply is not able to absorb those costs in the current year. On line 22, you'll see the fire suppression supplemental I spoke about earlier. This is our preliminary estimate of the supplemental needs, basically for spring firefighting and costs of some of the initial work that was done in wildland fires. We typically request a supplemental for this purpose, and then you'll see later on a ratification of prior year fire activities that we were not able to anticipate. So you'll see both transactions in this particular request. On line 23, you'll see a request under the Department of Public Safety. This has to do with, and we did talk about this last year, federal funds from the National Highway Safety Office that flow to the Department of Transportation had been used for the Bureau of Highway Patrol in the Department of Public Safety. There, over the past couple of years, there have been specific changes to that program that will not allow us to use the federal highway safety funds for non-DUI related activities. And as that has continued to evolve, DUI activities will also no longer be included. So what we have proposed in the 13 budget and the 14 budget now is a general fund change so that the Bureau of Highway Patrol, which I believe is about 23 troopers, will be funded with general funds. On line 24 is consideration for additional program receipts, $160,000, again in the Department of Public Safety, and this is for rural trooper housing. And basically, it's the rent that employees pay to occupy state leased or owned housing in rural Alaska. We are considering this also for a budget amendment. Line 25 is under the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. A one-time request of $125,000 for the rest of this year has to do with an appeal of a decision on cleanup of an old airport site at the village of Quinnagoc that now is going to be in front of, I believe, an administrative process. So we need an additional $125,000 for legal fees for the rest of this year. On line 26, also under the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, $155,000 is requested as the result of a consent decree with the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, in order to comply with stormwater permits that are required for most all of our construction projects. On line 27, there's a request for $824,700 for operations and maintenance of the new airport at Accutan. As you may know, that airport opened on September 1st. The Department of Transportation has individuals who are at the airport there to keep it open and operating. And this is part of our agreement with the Federal Aviation Administration, who helped, of course, to pay for that airport. We have included funding in the FY 2014 budget for the continuation of this program. Line 28 is also under the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, Marine Vessel Operations, $200,000. This is included in the governor's 2014 budget. It has to do with the retiree health insurance increases for the Marine retirees in the Marine bargaining units. Of course, that's the Inland Boatmen's Union, Masters, the Unlicensed Marine Unit, Marine Engineers Beneficial Association, and Masters, Mates, and Pilots. Line 29, through the court system, is a request of $526,900 for accommodations in the Bethel Courthouse. We have a judge in Bethel who is hearing impaired. This will provide the accommodations for transcription and other services that he needs in order to conduct business in the Bethel Superior Court. Mr. Chairman, then we go to this was all Section 1. Section 2, as I mentioned, is the funding summary. Section 3 begins the capital budget numbers section. So on line 32 of the spreadsheet, you'll see a request for $600,000 for the Petersburg Borough Organizational Grant. As you may know, we provide a three-year grant for borough organization, $300,000 the first year, $200,000 the second year, and $100,000 the third year. So this is a one-time request, and this will be made available to Petersburg. On line 33 is a request from the Department of Revenue, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. We're requesting $3.2 million in general funds that actually came to the state as a result of a settlement of the mortgage, national mortgage settlement with dealing with housing foreclosures across the nation. Alaska received $3.2 million. We're requesting to use those funds along with $22 million in AHFC bond authority and reappropriations that we'll talk about in Section 11 of the bill. So these multiple funding sources would be put together in order to proceed with San Roberto and Mountain View development, and those together will create 96 new units of affordable housing in Anchorage. Because of the multiple funding sources and the timing, that's the reason that you see this in the supplemental bill. So those are the capital items that are included in Section 3. Section 4 and 5, as I mentioned earlier, are funding summaries. Then if we go, Mr. Chairman, to line 36 of the spreadsheet. Excuse me. Line 36, Mr. Chairman, is for the Department of Fish and Game. You'll see on 6A a scope change having to do with a project that had previously been included for to install Capstone Avionics in their wildlife conservation aircraft, to shift that to aircraft maintenance. The Capstone Avionics are not feasible in the locations where some of these smaller aircraft are located. So the department is hoping that you would support a rescoping of that to be for maintenance. On 6B, Mr. Chairman, is a request, and I think LBNA had already approved a piece of this legislative budget and audit. These are $2 million in industry receipts that will add to the wildlife hatchery salmon management project, and this will allow industry receipts to help support the long-term research on hatchery production and wild stocks. Line 38 is for the Health and Social Services Office, a carry-forward authorization. We talked earlier about the Children's Health Insurance Program bonus payments. This will allow the department to carry forward an amount of approximately $1.3 million into the next fiscal year. So we're hoping that with the appropriations that we've requested in the numbers section and the ability to carry forward any unspent balances, this will help the Department of Health and Social Services continue on their efforts to contain costs. On line 39, Mr. Chairman, is the section related to judgments and settlements. There are eight, as I mentioned earlier, totaling $4,775,800. In section 8B, line 40 of your spreadsheet, is the language that we typically include so that if other judgments and settlements come in once the legislature has adjourned, those would also be authorized through that section. There are, on line 41, a request also to increase a prior appropriation having to do with Fast Ferry litigation from $600,000 to $2.1 million, an increase of $1.5 million in general funds. And that would be for the fiscal year, and so it would be cover two fiscal years, the current fiscal year and extend the lapse date. I believe that they're anticipating that that case will come to trial later this spring, and it has to do with the difficulties they've had with the Fast Ferry engines. On line 42 is the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Oil and Gas. This will request a two-year extension of a prior appropriation estimated to be about $1,189,000. This is for continuing gas pipeline right-of-way work. On line 43, Mr. Chairman, under the Department of Public Safety, they are requesting reappropriation of specific projects totaling about $339,000 from Anchorage Aircraft Hangar Improvements to a statewide aircraft hangar improvement project. Line 44 is section 11A. This is under the Department of Revenue, and it's the reappropriation I mentioned earlier under Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, where they were able to complete work on the Lusac Manor renovation and replacement project and have funding remaining in that appropriation that they're proposing to use for the San Roberto Mountain View project along with those other funding sources. So it's the combination of those three pieces that would be needed to move forward on the San Roberto project. On line 45, section 11B, this is a request, Mr. Chairman, to repurpose funds that had been appropriated to the Department of Revenue in 2011 for payment card security standards. In other words, for state agencies who accept credit cards to do business, there were some new industry standards that had to be met in a very short period of time. When we requested the reappropriation, we didn't know how much work would be necessary across all our departments to come into compliance within that time frame. The good news is they were able to come into compliance without having to use a lot of that specific funding for that purpose. We are asking for your support to reappropriate just under $1.9 million of that to the Department of Revenue for ongoing work with oil and gas fiscal systems analysis. So we're hoping that you will support that. On line 46, 12A, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, there is a request for a multi-year appropriation having to do with legal fees related to the fish hatchery in Fairbanks. This is to pursue action to recover costs incurred as a result of some of the problems with the original design and some of the cost overruns. One of the settlements that you'll see in that we talked about earlier has to do with about $3.6 million to the contractor because of cost overruns. So this would be $750,000 multi-year for the department to pursue that effort. Also on line 47, section 12B, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, this is a technical correction, again, to come into compliance with requirements having to do with general fund program receipts collected by DOT for the sale or lease of right-of-way. Those revenues need to be collected and used specifically for allowable purposes under the federal program authority. So the department is requesting carry-forward language to use those under the specific federal guidelines. On line 48, debt service, you'll see 13A, we are requesting a decrease of $1,040,000, and this will basically allow us to utilize a balance in the debt retirement fund rather than general funds for some of our debt service costs in the current fiscal year. 13B is a fund switch having to do with the international airport funds. This is an adjustment that they do mid-year, looking at their debt service ratios and how much they're actually charging to their customers and the people they're collecting fees from, so they can make this adjustment to cover their debt service costs without having to increase fees on the airport users. On line 50, you'll see a request to decrease school construction debt by $5 million. And what happens is we bring you a request based on a projection of the voter-approved debt in various municipal school districts and the timing that they're projecting they're going to sell their bonds and when they will come into repayment. When those bonds don't come into repayment and the timelines that they have been projecting, it gives us a balance here, and that's what you're seeing, is that $5 million will not be necessary in the current year. On line 51, the disaster relief supplemental I talked about earlier, $900,000 of this $3.4 million is specific to the fall storms that we had, and $2.5 million has to do with is a projection of spring flooding. We typically do have flooding occur in the spring, and this will give us just a little bit of cushion to deal with that in anticipation of those events. Line 52 is the Fish and Game Fund transfer that I spoke about earlier, having to do with those waterfowl sanctuary and shooting range receipts then would be deposited into the Fish and Game Fund. So those would capitalize the fund, and then back in the operating budget, you saw the request to spend those receipts out of the Fish and Game Fund rather than general fund program receipts. Section 16 is a ratification, and that ratification is for fire suppression for fiscal year 2012. That amount is $2,927,446.05. So that would be the request to ratify that prior year. On line 54, section 17A, we have different laps of appropriations. So it specifically goes in and talks about projects in the bill. So for example, section 6, which was the Fish and Game discussion we had about changing the capstone to statewide maintenance, would have a capital lapse on it. as same as Section 10, which was the Department of Public Safety's aircraft hangar, and Section 11, the Department of Revenue, Oil and Gas. On line 55, 17B, we have two sections that are for capitalization, the Disaster Relief Fund in Section 14, and the Fish and Game Funds in Section 15. On line 56, the fire suppression ratification is retroactive. So that's what it goes back to June 30 of 2012 for the ratification to occur. That would be true also on line 57 relating to the DOT right-of-way receipts and that carry forward that we talked about. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, there is an effective date of April 14, 2013 for all other aspects of the bill. That was kind of painful, I'm sorry. But we're through the spreadsheet, so we'll try to answer questions.
Before you go to are you going to go to ratifications?
The ratification, yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. On line 62, it's the ratification for fire suppression, the $2,927,000. Yeah.
Questions? Representative Stoltz.
Okay, let me think of some questions. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Rehfeld, you have total confidence every one of these is a must-have in the supplemental and can't be deferred to the regular operating capital budgets. You stand by that on a Bible? As we still believe in God around here.
Mr. Chairman, Co-Chair Stoltz, we bring these before you because we believe that the information that we have at the time right now means that they're not going to be able to manage these. This is a very, very thin supplemental bill. We're in preparing this document, we worked really hard with our departments to say, what are those things that you really are not going to be able to manage? Now, what I can say to you is it's February, and if there are, as departments get further into the fiscal year, if we get better refinement of these numbers, you know, I'm happy to bring those forward to you. Our amendment deadline is next week, but I know you would appreciate if we do find changes in these numbers that we bring them forward, and that includes going down if we don't need them. But we're giving you the best information we have at this point in time.
Well, Mr. Co-Chair, I'm just looking at line 36, the Capstone Avionics. I don't think the department was anticipating revenues for the aircraft maintenance, which certainly will affect how Representative Edgeman, the public safety budget chair, will deal with those. That's one example. I'm just looking at the blush, having dealt with that at first blush. They weren't anticipating having that. Is this an example? It might be more opportunistic than emergency, which supplemental, and I'm just seeing a couple of these right off the top. How is that a must-have right now? I don't see that. They weren't anticipating having that use. It appears opportunistic, and I don't see that, and say that in a pejorative term.
Mr. Chairman, under Co-Chair Stoltz, absolutely understand what you're saying. Those particular items are reappropriations of projects that were previously approved to those specific departments, and you know, if the legislature is not supportive of reappropriating those funds, those would either close out and lapse into the general fund or be available for some other purpose. But we believe that there are ongoing maintenance needs for public safety and for fish and game and all these others who have, you know, quite a list of deferred and other maintenance requirements. So we're looking for an opportunity without having to take more money out of the general fund.
And Mr. Co-Chair, I have a whole bunch of questions, but I'll just ask one on ABC. They have not been that subdivision of formerly Public Safety, now Commerce. They were not anxious to move, and what I've heard through the folks at administration and other departments, they've squealed and yelped every step of the way, complaining about office, complaining about other administrative things. And when I see a supplemental form on legal costs, it just It makes me suspicious of that because of them not being a team player on something that the legislature passed and the administration signed. And I mean, that's just, I'm just seeing these things pop out. This is a smaller one, but smaller supplemental we've dealt in the past, but maybe we should have had that level of scrutiny in the past. We're dealing with less funds at every level.
Mr. Chairman, on
co-chair, these are just the tip iceberg tips of things I'm seeing.
And you bring a very good point, that Mr. Chairman, co-chair Stoltz, the issue with ABC board, particularly on the legal fees, is the difference in how they were actually billed for those services from one department to the other. And so that's, you know, something that may not have been fully anticipated at the time they were moving, which is unfortunate, but we've tried to correct for that now.
I'll have other questions later, Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Just following up on Representative Stoltz's question, we might have not been on the same side on the vote on moving the ABC board, but I have a similar concern on line two, and I think it might be something that I just don't understand. Are you requesting an extra $62,000 for legal work, or is that just receipts that are moving from one department to another department and it's not an extra expenditure by the state?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, this is a request for increased program receipt authorization. Basically, their billing for legal services is greater than what they had been paying under the Department of Public Safety. And the main reason for that is in public safety, their cost allocation plan was based on number of positions, as I understand it. And so the ABC board does not have, is not a big office. So they were charged very little. But when they got to the Department of Commerce, their allocation plan is really based more on the costs that are actually specific to a program. And the ABC board does have some significant legal assistance required for some of the work that they do. So their billings are actually more related to what they're costing the program. And that's what we're asking for here.
Through the chair. I think I still don't understand. I don't want to spend too much time because this is $62,000, so I'm going to go to the next issue. But I don't understand why it would cost them more for legal billings to be in one agency than another. You did say program receipts, which makes it sound like it's a wash, that it's money that's coming in from outside, but maybe it's not. So is this an extra state expenditure that didn't exist when they were in public safety? And I guess maybe if you can try and explain one more time why, if it is an extra expenditure.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, these are receipts. These are general fund program receipts. So these come from the licensees under the ABC board. So those are the program receipts. What I'm saying is that in the Department of Commerce, they're actually being billed for the percentage of time that an attorney needs to spend on some of their legal work. And in the Department of Public Safety, they were not billed the same way. I think if that had spent some, that probably could have been discussed last session. I just don't think it was anticipated when the change was occurring.
Thanks.
The department can give you more information, though.
And then on line 40.
You have a comment on that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, just on Representative Guerra's point, and we're dealing with the same department, we're having the same type, and if there's an opportunity through Representative Holmes' subcommittee chairmanship to figure out if we need to do some fixing there. And then secondly, we're dealing with a similar issue with Commerce on the film office. These bureaucracies have a hard time on letting go of positions and money, and I would like to ferret out whether or not we're in one of these situations. And I just, anytime I agree with Representative Guerra, I cherish those opportunities to pursue those avenues. So thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, for sleeping in on that.
Thank you.
Another question?
Yeah, just on a bigger appropriation on line 46. Was it line 46? It wasn't line 46. Mr. Chair, when I figure out what line it really is, I'll ask the question so you can move on to somebody else.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Karen, can you tell me
When the agreement, Department of Labor, when they made that change for the $1 million for the increase, when was that agreement begun?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, let me try to get there and see if I can have that answer for you. Line 21.
Still not raising the salmon there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, I'm looking at the backup for this particular project, and it looks like the Anchorage lease came into effect in April. The Juno lease expired in June of 2012. I'm not entirely certain if I can quickly pull that out, but I believe I have a representative from the department who could answer questions for you on that. If you...
Mr. Chair, the question basically, I'm just trying to find out the whole year here or just partial year, which was getting here to clarification.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Paloma Harbor. I'm with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and thank you for the opportunity to answer a question. through the chair, Representative Wilson, this is a partial year's expense. The lease costs for the Eagle Street facility that were referenced did go up in April, and they're going to go up again this April when we anticipate the renovations to be completed. And the costs for the 8th Street facility here in Juneau went up July 1. We're in holdover status, so it's a set rate. It is an increase over last year, but we anticipate to go up even further once renovations are completed at the end of this fiscal year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we'll investigate this a little bit more in subcommittee.
Okay, thank you.
Karen, on the permit, on the Medicaid, $25 million negative number. It's most of your increments here reflect that they'll be also carried forward in the FY14 budget. Is this decrement get carried forward in the FY14 budget?
Mr. Chairman, we spent quite a bit of time talking with the Department of Health and Social Services about that. As you know, the FY14 budget has a fairly small increase in Medicaid when you compare it to what we've been looking at over the past several years. What I believe the department is projecting is an increase in the number of eligible individuals under Medicaid in the next fiscal year. I think it goes up to about 151,000 individuals. But what happens is that the costs are really driven by how many people participate in Medicaid and our ability to contain the costs in Medicaid. So while I think the commissioner is very encouraged by what we're seeing in the current year, I don't think they're at the place yet with their projections to be able to say that we can take additional money out of the 14 budget. It certainly isn't our intention to try to set up a supplemental situation in FY14. So we're proceeding cautiously with the $25 million decrement that's included here, and then again, once we continue to get more actual experience in the current fiscal year, if those projections should change, we'd be, you know, more than happy to bring a new request forward. But at this time, we weren't, we just weren't at a place where we thought we could adjust the FY14 request.
Part of the American Affordability Care Act talks about expansion of Medicaid, and your current FY14 budget does not include that.
That's correct.
Are you anticipating amendments next week that may include that expansion?
Mr. Chairman, no, I'm not. I know that the Department of Health and Social Services has been doing quite a bit of work on reviewing the impacts of the expansion, what that might look like, the pros and cons, and in order to really help inform any decision that would be made on that topic. As far as I know, we've not had that discussion with, I don't know that that work is complete yet. They don't have a set of recommendations for us.
Okay, thank you. Representative Garrett, did you find your line item?
Yeah, I found it. It was line 46. Oh. I know Representative Holmes is familiar with this area, too, as being cursed with being a lawyer as well. But is that $750,000 for legal fees for this litigation? Is that in-house attorneys who are going to be handling this, or are we paying for higher-cost private attorneys to do this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, I'm not certain. I would have to ask the department whether it was in-house or not. I know much of the work that's been done currently has been in-house, but I would defer to the department to answer that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to know that, and I just... great. Should be used to this question every year.
For the record, I'm Dave Blaisdell, Admin Service Director for the Department of Law, and I believe it'll cover both. We've got some expert witness testimony that we have to also include in this.
But the attorneys will be in-house?
The attorneys, I believe, right at this point, are planned to be in-house.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions before we go on to the next presentation? Okay, seeing none, we'll take a brief at ease before we bring up the Department of Information and talk about statewide information technology. I want to call the meeting back to order. We will now take up the statewide information technology government system overview. Michael Barnhill, Deputy Commissioner, thank you for joining us at the table. And I see you brought the backup with you. So, because there's two males speaking into the mics and our recorders will pick up two different males, so identify yourselves as you get started. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike Barnhill. I work for the Department of Administration as Deputy Commissioner. With me today is Dave Blaisdell from the Department of Law. And we're here today to discuss at a fairly high level what is the processes and the structures that are in place that govern statewide information technology. I'll start off with a caveat, Mr. Chair, that I'm probably one of the least best people to address this subject. We had Director of ETS, Enterprise Technology Services, Pat Shire. His last day on the job was Friday. We have appointed an acting director. His name is Adam Pollack. We're very excited to have him as acting during this interim time period, but I just didn't feel it was fair in no respect, disrespect intended, to throw him into this committee on this subject today. I've asked former colleague, Mr. Blaisdell, to join me at the table because he has somewhat more experience in this subject than I do, but we'll do the best we can, and to the extent that we cannot adequately answer your questions, we'll certainly go and get the information. This chart tells us in a nutshell what is the structure for IT governance overview. This was adopted back in 2008. The structure more or less remains in place today, and it is a fairly complicated governance structure. It's not an unusual governance structure, but it does take some explanation, and I'll endeavor to do that. As you can see, it has tiers of review, and everything sort of bubbles up, so that's all the arrows point up. But the first step in the IT governance overview is that all state departments submit an IT plan on an annual basis. That plan then goes up to the Technology Management Council. They do a review. Their review funnels up to the Enterprise Review Team. Then above that, there's the Enterprise Investment Board. And then finally, the budget decisions are made at the Office of Management and Budget. What I'll do now is just step through each of those levels and give you a little bit more detail on each of them. So as I said, all departments annually prepare and submit information technology plans. And when I say all departments, I mean in the executive branch only. We're not talking about the University of Alaska or the court system or even the legislature, just executive branch departments. And all of those plans are required to set forth the following. They describe the IT strategy of the department, the IT accomplishments in the past year of the department, any non-standard technical solutions, and that's some jargon, and I'll try and explain that. The Technology Management Council, which is the next step, adopts standards, and the expectation is that all departments will adopt a standard, like a particular type of software, a particular type of hardware platform, and the expectation is that you go standard. And the reason for that is just, you know, you get a better purchasing power when you're purchasing at scale across the enterprise. Standard technical solutions will confer efficiencies if all the departments are using it, as opposed to the siloed approach. Now, there's a recognition here that we don't have uniformity across the board. We do have departments that have non-standard technical solutions. So we ask the departments to describe those. What are your non-standard technical solutions? And then we ask to describe what is your strategy to migrate from your non-standard solution to your standard solution. We ask departments about what is their plan for backup and recovery, what is their plan for desktop provisioning, that is support for desktops and the cycle, the desktop replacement cycle. What's their current use of the mainframe, their plan to meet storage needs, and if they have a plan for desktop and server virtualization. Then we also ask the IT plan, the departments to set forth in their IT plan any project funding requests that they have for the upcoming fiscal year, any projects they're ongoing for which they need no further funding, and then finally, what are their operational costs? The IT plans have been collected from departments, I believe, for 13 years, so quite some time. But this structure has only existed since 2008, so the IT plans sort of predate our existing structure. In years past, they were fairly large documents. But under the stewardship of Director Shire, there were concerns that they were probably too comprehensive and that the value of the very large document was the costs of putting that together were outweighing the benefits. So those plans have been scaled down a bit. They still contain, this is the information they contain now, but they're not quite as burdensome to prepare as they have been in the past. Do you want to add any color to that, Dave?
No, actually, just this is Dave Blaisdell,
again with the Department of Law. I think that when the previous director did come to the admin service directors, there was a consensus among everybody that a reduction in the plans would actually make them more valuable to the users, and I think that it was embraced and a good move by ETS in asking us to do that.
The size of the plans went from about this to about half that. So that's about between all 15 departments. It still occupies a fair amount of paper, still has a fair amount of information in it that will enable, as we see next, the upper tiers of review to make informed decisions. So the next tier up is that it's what we call the Technology Management Council. And currently, the Technology Management Council consists of the following seats: the director of ETS, who is, as I said, is acting director Adam Pollack. The Department of Health and Social Services has a seat on the Technology Management Council. That's currently occupied by Mr. Banaszak. The Department of Transportation also has a seat on the TMC. That's occupied by Mr. Crowder. The decision to dedicate those two seats to the TMC is just a product. These are large agencies that have significant IT needs. In fact, this was interesting when I heard it. The Department of Health and Social Services IT section is actually larger than Enterprise Technology Services in terms of personnel count. Then we have two general seats. One seat represents the Department of Administration, the Governor's Office, and the Department of Law. That seat is currently actually occupied by Mariah Shakespeare. That reference to Ms. McCall is incorrect. The second general seat represents Commerce, Education, Labor, and Revenue, and that's occupied by Mr. Haig. Then we have a seat representing the public protection agencies, corrections, military and veterans affairs, and public safety. That's occupied by Lonnie Liebrand. And then finally, the resources seat, environmental conservation, fish and game, and DNR, occupied by Mr. Light. And these folks meet about every 2 weeks throughout the course of the year. And among their responsibilities are to set the technological standards that I referenced earlier. When there's an agency that would like an exemption from those standards, it reviews and decides those requests. It reviews all of the department IT plans that we discussed on the previous slide and makes recommendations. And then they also make policy recommendations regarding new and emerging technologies. An example is desktop virtualization as an item that is emerging and that there seems to be a fair amount of interest regarding. All right. If we go back, let me just jump back here to the schematic. You can see there's a dotted line going to the right after the Technology Management Council to the Administrative Services Director. And that group performs a very important function in overall IT governance, and that's why I've invited Mr. Blaisdell to come, and since he actually participates in this process to a greater level than I thought it would be good to at least have the committee hear from one actual participant. So I'll let Mr. Blaisdell speak to the ASDs.
Again, my name is Dave Blaisdell. The ASDD purpose, as it says, it's to focus on initiatives and really help the state identify administrative policies and procedures and shape them to just help us perform better for the state. As a group, we meet every 2 weeks, my piece of that is I'm serving as the spokesman for the AST IT subcommittee. In that, issues are brought to the IT subcommittee by the ETS director or could be an ASD member. Our roles include reviewing the fiscal impact of some of these IT initiatives. We would like to get more involved actually with the reviews of the chargeback rates and reviewing the technical issues and their impacts to the business processes. We consider technology needs that may require direct multiple agency funding. I guess the thing I'd like to do is kind of give you an example of what may happen. We have a situation as we move towards Western Alaska with just having poor internet or access with our data systems. I think you've probably all heard about that. And so speaking of Dillingham in particular, we tried to address that issue. We were hearing stories of people going home to actually do their work with their computer at home to do state business just because of the difficulties with the internet connection. Mr. Shire brought that to the IT subgroup because I think they went out to try to improve the connections, and the cost of that was going to be huge. My understanding is that when they went out to bid, we were looking at just our normal response time for these computers, and there's this a thing called uptime. You may have heard of the five nines. Basically, what the five nines, it tells you is how often your computer will stay up. If you've got five nines, you're down about 5 minutes a year, and it just goes down from there. Well, in our group, we certainly considered, or we talked about, is that necessary for us to carry out the business? And so we just try to address issues of that nature as we go through. Most of the issues we deal with are crossing departments and really focus on trying to tie the business end into the technological solutions that might be being considered.
The top level of the schematic, Mr. Chair, consists of the Enterprise Review Team, the Enterprise Investment Board, and the Office of Management and Budget. So the Enterprise Review Team consists of myself, the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Administration, the OMB Chief Policy Analyst, the Director of Enterprise Technology Services, and the ASD IT Chair. And we met twice in the past year. In the budget context to consider the collective projects that have been brought forward. Above us is the Enterprise Investment Board, which is your top level, and that consists of my boss, Commissioner Hultberg, the Chief of Staff, the OMB Director, Mr. Shire, previously Mr. Shire, the ETS Director, and the ASD IT Chair. All taken together, what we do is essentially perform a filtering and review function of project proposals and policy direction. What I'm going to do now is just take you back again to the schematic. And again, you can see the arrows all go up. And that structure, again, that's a structure that we inherited in 2008. It was a product of IT strategic planning study performed by an entity called Unisys. And the nature of this structure is quite beneficial in that the grassroots, if you will, have a very large stake in how decisions get made. Everything starts at the bottom and sort of bubbles up. But we're taking a look at this because, I don't know, from my perspective, I think it would help a bit if we at least had dotted arrows starting at the top and going down, so that upper level policymakers have some ability to insert direction in the policymaking process. And so that's something that we're just starting to poke at. There may need to be some adjustments, some tweaks to this structure in the future. But nothing revolutionary. I think if there's anything that we would change, it would just be allowing upper-level policymakers to help, you know, steer the ship a bit. But what we do want to emphasize for your committee today is there is a governance structure. It does operate along the lines that I've just described. And we're always looking to make it better insofar as we have the power and authority to do that. I'll be candid with the committee. From the Department of Administration's perspective, at least over the last year, our focus has been almost entirely internal. We have really taken a hard, close look at enterprise technology services and how it's functioning internally, how it sets chargeback rates, which Mr. Blaisdell referenced a minute ago, whether those chargeback rates are appropriately calculated, whether they're experientially based, whether they're sufficiently transparent to our customers. And so we've spent very, very little time focusing on enterprise IT governance in the past year. Is that something that we want to take on in the future? Absolutely, yes. The commissioner has indicated this, her desire to move on to that repeatedly. But we do think it's important to make sure that within our agency, we are functioning and executing as best as we possibly can. And once that we've got that squared away, then I think it's appropriate to take on IT governance as a whole. And understanding, too, that we're one of 15 departments, so we're one voice in how that IT governance happens, and we recognize that. I promised high level, and usually I talk longer than I'm supposed to, so this time I didn't.
Thank you. In several of our overviews, we've talked about different IT systems that are in and around different departments, and administration has their own, from what I understand. And I can't remember the acronym that you guys used the last time you were here talking about it. And one of the other departments had a different system that they had a different acronym that they named it. And one of the questions we had at that time was, do they talk to each other? And are we as a state planning for 5-10 years down the road on how our budget's going to look overall? And how can we get the most efficient use out of IT and in creating a downward turn in the demand for dollar values or budget values to get there? And so your last statement in reference to not much done over the last year, I'm curious as to the long-term planning process of getting the state of Alaska connected.
Mr. Chair, so when I say not much done in the last year, what I mean is that we haven't really focused on scrutinizing the process and the structure in any meaningful fashion in the past year. So to the extent there needs to be changes, that's something that we've put down the road a bit. But the structure, as I've described it, exists, and it will continue to exist, and we will continue to have IT plans developed and proposed and reviewed by the Technology Management Council, and then filter up the chain, and then ultimately budget decisions are made reflecting the information that's provided in that that tiered governance structure. With respect to solutions, platforms and different departments and whether they talk to each other, that's absolutely something that we're dealing with. As you know, we're in the process of implementing a replacement for the state's accounting system and the state's payroll system, and so it must by necessity talk to the hardware and software solutions that are in our customer agencies. And that is definitely a complex issue. There's interfaces all over the state that we have to care for when we're changing from a legacy system to something that's more modern.
Thank you. Got questions there. Representative Munoz and then Representative Holmes.
Thank you. So all of the departments put together one of these plans every year. It would appear to be a very labor-intensive effort. Do you have any idea how many, not exactly, but roughly the amount of manpower needed to put into this effort and the number of personnel working on these plans? Thank you.
Through the chair, Rep. Munoz, I'm going to actually ask Mr. Blaisdell, who's prepared one of these things. Mm-hmm. I haven't.
Well, actually, I haven't, Dave Blaisdell again. I haven't actually prepared one, but I've been involved with developing them. And it's going to vary depending on the different departments. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at the Department of Law, ours is fairly small. We can prepare it fairly quickly, but if we go to the Department of Health and Social Services, I suspect it takes multiple people from multiple different agencies to get involved in order to prepare a meaningful IT plan.
Is that an ongoing effort then? I mean, once that plan is completed, then you're working on the plan for the next year? I mean, and when does it really, I mean, at what point do you really work together to coordinate that, the recommendations in 1 year's plan before you're working on the objectives of the next year's plan?
What I can speak to is the Department of Law. When we develop our plan, it might take a couple of weeks, and then we go through a couple of reviews to develop it. And I use it during the year to refer back. It is a tool that I use, but I don't constantly update it. It is, once a year project.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So looking through our budget requests for this year going forward, I coincidentally, the two budgets I'm overseeing are your budget and your budget, so this is the perfect panel. And so as you both know, you're looking at law and admin, just for example, there are different IT requests in both budgets, and I'm assuming that in just about every other one. If you go to the chart on page 2, that is kind of the general overview of the when we're putting into place new platforms or new databases, where in this chart either does reside the oversight authority or maybe ought to reside the oversight authority of figuring out how to make these things talk to each other? For instance, if I'm putting something into place in the Department of Law, does it need to talk to the court system? Does it need to talk to this? I know that we've struggled with that. How do we make sure that the Department of Motor Vehicles talks to the Department of Division of Elections? And how do we not spend a whole lot of time entering data multiple times into multiple systems? Where in that chart do we have those kinds of conversations?
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, I think it probably ought to exist at multiple levels of this chart. So, for instance, if a particular solution is required to interface with other hardware platforms, that should be in the project proposal itself, to the extent that the solution has awareness. I mean, some of the interfaces, it's so complex. And I know a little bit about this through the
I'm not
payroll.
Trying to beat you up.
No, it's just, for instance, in our replacement for the accounting system and the payroll system, there are literally dozens of interfaces that exist throughout the enterprise that have to get data from Access, our current accounting system, or Access has to give or get data from the departments. And some of those, when we began this project, we knew about, and many we just did not. Mm-hmm. And so ideally, when you're doing a project proposal, there should be a cataloging of all the interfaces so that we know up front what are all the things that need to talk to each other. So I would say, yes, it should happen at the IT plan level. Yes, it should happen. There should be a check on that at the TMC level and then up onwards through. Does that always happen? No, it doesn't always happen. And we know that for a fact because in the project that we're dealing with, we're learning about interfaces that we were not aware of some years ago when we came forward with the proposals to do the replacement of the accounting system. So, you have the ideal, and then you have, actually how it gets implemented.
So if I follow up, Mr. Chairman, I know it's a daunting task, lots of departments, lots of different things, but, you know, when we're looking at budget requests for these, it would be really nice if we knew that there was some way that, a department, when they were thinking that they needed a new database, had talked, had maybe brought it up, maybe at that lower level for starters in those meetings at the all state departments or whatever, and said, look, we're going forward, we're going out to look for a new platform for X. Maybe there's an opportunity there for other departments to say, oh my gosh, it'd be really nice if we could have access to that, or gosh, we actually have something that does that, maybe we should all collect. I feel like we, and I think you're acknowledging, we can do better going forward, so I'd love to see some work done on making sure that happens.
Yeah, no, through the chair, I completely agree. Well, we can do better. Achieving scale and communicating with amongst departments to try and share solutions. But, you know, one of the challenges is that we, for better or for worse, we have on the spectrum of centralization to decentralization, we're relatively decentralized when it comes to how we've administered IT in the past. Should we be trying to move that needle more towards centralization? You know, there's always this debate. The more centralized you are, the less responsive you are to specific department needs. The less decentralized you are, the less benefit you get from scale and efficiency and purchasing power. And, you know, as managers, we're always trying to hunt for what is the optimal place to put that needle on the scale of centralization versus decentralization. There's no one right answer. We just try to deal with what we've been dealt. And I think, did you have some thoughts on that?
Dave Blaisdell again. I was just, I think what I wanted to share is that there is quite a bit of that dialogue going. For example, we're looking to deploy a case management system, and I've talked to DOA several times about doing that, and we're certainly going to be making sure they have an opportunity to see the requirements that we're going out after. We're working with we've worked with the court system, had meetings with them, we'll continue to work with them, trying to make sure that as we move forward, and I think other agencies are in the same boat, as they move forward, they want to make sure these systems are going to make everybody's job easier, not just into their, you know, their own department. So I think there's quite a bit of it going on, but yeah, I don't know that we have it real strong into our process.
And that's a good example, actually.
Thank you.
Just as a comment, one of our overviews we were talking, and I believe it was DPS that we were talking to in reference to a police officer in Palmer writing a speeding ticket electronically and it automatically going to the court system, and then the opportunity for that person to go home and electronically pay that fine. Those are the kind of things I think that we as legislators are interested in looking at the long-term ability of the state to do things in a less costly manner. So it's just a comment on one thing we've seen out there.
I definitely appreciate that, Mr. Chair. I mean, there's all sorts of really cool ideas out there for, you know, all state services being consolidated on a kiosk that people can access from, you know, a mall or a department store, or from their home for that matter. Any effort in that direction, of course, requires time, money, resources. But it's I know other states have implemented things like that, and it's definitely something that we can be looking at in the future.
As I've explained over the years, I've sat on finance that unless the department asks for it, 99% chance they're not going to get it. And so the management aspects of how the state runs falls back upon your guys' shoulder. Representative Guerra.
Thank you. I guess the first question is for Mike and then the next one for Dave. You both mentioned two systems, and I'm just curious whether this really saves us money or whether these are bells and whistles that, I mean, if we've got to decide between firing somebody in a very important position or buying a computer system, I want to make sure it's saving money. So, Mike, let me ask you about the payroll system that you mentioned, the antiquated payroll system we have. Let's assume we spend however many millions of dollars on a new payroll system. It's easier not to hire somebody than it is to fire somebody. I'm not a big fan of firing people. But are you going to save the equivalent money that you're going to pay for in the new payroll system by terminating people? How is this going to save us money, or is it just going to not save us money and make things work better?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra. So the payroll replacement is actually a pretty interesting question. And our existing solution, ACPay, is from a company, I believe, called Tesseract, that has been steadily losing customers. It went into effect, I believe, in 1990. And right now, its customer base is approximately 24 customers. And every time it loses a customer, it's losing payroll and cash flow, that is. And so we are envisioning a time when that company will become defunct and will no longer be able to provide support for that solution. So that's one. In case you're getting worried about us not making payroll because the system collapses, we actually have... we've worked out a deal with Tesseract, and the code has actually been placed in escrow so that if the company goes bankrupt, we have the ability to access the code and make adjustments, code in there and so that we can keep the system up and running until the new solution comes on. But it's clear from our perspective that that's a system that is more than legacy. It's almost defunct. And it would be imprudent for us to continue to maintain that indefinitely. That was one of the rationales for proceeding with that. The other thing that's important to know about how we do payroll in the state is that a significant portion of it is done manually. So our payroll division and the division of personnel, they receive faxed timesheets that are hand keyed in. They receive timesheets that are filled out in pencil, hard copy, that are hand keyed in. We get some things electronically. There are some departments that have stood up an effort at a time and attendance system, Fish and Game, I believe Department of Transportation. And so we get some things electronically that feed into ACPay. But we have essentially what is a fragmented payroll information collection and computation system. One of the biggest problems that you have with that, and other states have experienced this, when you have so much manual computation and data entry, is mistakes. And that's something we also believe as management, that it's imprudent to maintain that indefinitely. We want people to be paid accurately and timely every week or every pay period. No deviations from that. Do we have that now? No, we don't. And what's happened in other states when they have transitioned from a partially manual process to a fully automated process is that there's suddenly recognition, wow, we've been doing it wrong for a long time. Sometimes that's good news to the employees because they've been underpaid, bad news to management because we got to find the money. Sometimes it's the other way around, bad news to the employees because they've been overpaid. We don't want either of those. So that's why it's imperative that we move forward and replace ACPay. I understand that there have been instances when ACPay has gone down. It was hard to stand it back up. We believe at this point in time we've got sufficient resources within the Division of Finance to be able to care for that if it should happen. But we really don't want to have to deal with that. And your latter question about is this going to save money? Yeah, I mean, that's the theory. Over time, when you automate a function that's done manually, two things happen. One is it's quicker, cheaper, more accurate. And two is you can either save those positions or redirect them to a more productive function. Within our department, the turnover in the payroll section is relatively high. It's not a job that people really particularly like. And would they rather be doing more meaningful, productive work? I think so. Would we rather them be doing more meaningful, productive work? Absolutely. That's obviously the goal of any manager, is to make sure that you've got decent morale within your workforce. So in terms of ultimate payoff, we believe it will pencil out over time. Absolutely.
Thank you. And then through the chair, Dave, the case management system you're talking about, that's another example that you guys mentioned. Is that something you've done a cost-benefit analysis on whether or not that actually will pay for itself with reductions in budget requests in the future or not?
Representative Guerra, we've done a feasibility study, but it's geared more to what happens if we lose our electronic tool or our case management system now. We deployed our current case management system in mid to late 90s. At one point, we were actually looking for parts for the servers on eBay because our servers were so old. Now we've resolved that issue, but the case management system is still one from the 1995. What we do with that case management system includes calendaring for our attorneys in the criminal division. If we lose that system, it will be very difficult at best for our attorneys to be efficient with the job that they perform. And we'd like to keep them, you know, doing the substantive issues with law.
And Mr. Chair, I apologize. I need to clarify. When I was discussing the payroll with Representative Guerra, I actually blurred two systems, and I apologize for that. There's the payroll, and then there's the time and attendance collection system. Most of my comments pertain to the time and attendance collection system. Both of these systems work very closely to collect the time, collect it accurately, and then have the records of account for payroll, and then get the checks cut.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The only reason I make that point is I don't know what the budget's going to look like by the time it gets to the legislature, but $2 million here and $2 million there, and you've got to measure what impact it is there compared to the impact of maybe looking at an agency where somebody's life is on the line or opportunity is on the line or chances of improving their life is on the line. And you know, they're tough decisions, but that was the thrust of the questions.
Okay, that's fine. Seeing no further questions, we are not going to hold a meeting tomorrow at 1:30. We have nothing on the schedule right now, so we'll start again up Monday morning, or Monday afternoon, rather, excuse me. That, we're adjourned.